Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, first of all, she lies. It's not live, but now she's
she's
gone.
Laughing.
She's dead. Yeah, it's
okay.
Not live, but she's dead. All right. The reason you can do what you do is what you were starting to say.
Because we partner and collaborate with so many organizations on everything that we do. And so it'd be great to learn about it and then figure out, you know, yes, we've been doing it a long time, but we need partners and we always need people doing new things. So I think it's exciting.
Good. Well, you should know, maybe we'll just make a time to really talk about that and concentrate on the show now. But we had 1,000 people. It was virtual, but we had 1,000 people at our conference over 4 days last October. So that's not bad.
That's fantastic. No, that's amazing. Tell me again the name of the institute.
It's called The Kitalis, K-I-T-A-L-Y-S, K-I-T-A-L-Y-S
okay.
Institute. It's only pending as 501c3. It's that new. But we have a very nice conference tomorrow, a webcast, just 2 hours on exercise. It's just on exercise. And I'm a lawyer, but we're hanging with the geroscientists. So it's a lot of geroscience stuff. We're trying to do something called Project HealthSpan, where we have an actual law enacted to give a national policy on HealthSpan like they have in the UK. So there's a lot of similarities, we'll say. And I'll definitely
send
you info.
Yeah, we should talk about that. That, you know, Dan Perry, who founded the Alliance in 86, was part of those conversations where that term HealthSpan even was invented. He was one of the starters of that conversation and what it means and how important it is. And that's sort of the basis of what we do at the Alliance, is advancing HealthSpan.
Right. And I saw it. And I saw it. It made the distinction that we make between longevity and healthy longevity.
Exactly.
Which is key. And so when we're finished, I'll definitely make the appointment. One more pitch. That is what I do. I'm the executive director, but I'm also on a committee for the United Nations Committee on Aging. And it just so happens that they also call it a moonshot of HealthSpan in the next decade. So the International Day of Older Persons, which already took place in October, and the next one will be again in October, that was their emphasis. It was on HealthSpan. So they started a newsletter. And the newsletter is coming out in a month. And my job is to define terms. And the next this month it was digital divide. Next month it's HealthSpan. And
fantastic.
Yeah. So we really, really, really ought to talk about how
we want the
UN to deal. All right, great. So I always ask every guest, if there's one thing you want to bring out, that when the show is over, you'll say, oh, I didn't say it. What would it be? And then I make sure you get a chance to say it. That's why I ask.
Oh, I love that question. You know, I really want to focus on the Valve Disease Day, but I think if you're looking at our work broadly, I really want people to understand how important it is to be their own health advocate. And then we also see with a lot of the things we touch on, diseases and conditions that we work on, one a sort of undercurrent or a common theme is that a lot of times things get dismissed because of aging. We think it's a normal part of aging, or we don't take action, or we don't get the care we need. And so I think it's really important that people be an advocate and understand a lot of these things are not a normal part of aging and can be treated. So I'd love to sort of talk about that as well.
Great. So we'll do that probably in the second question. First, I do want to, you know, promote that this is that this just passed. It was this Monday, and get into people understanding why you would focus particularly on this issue, okay? So, Stuart, we are ready to go. You're going to hear some music. We have to be quiet. You'll get introduced. You'll see. It'll be very easy. Go ahead.
Okay.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. And you know what? In this particular show, we really are going to be talking about the truth. I have with me today Lindsay Clark, Alliance for Aging Research, one of the real, I guess, the leader maybe, in what it means to understand aging and how we can move the needle with regard to our own health span, which we've been talking about, meaning not only our longevity, but our healthy longevity. And we have a couple of different tracks that we're going to cover today. One is the fact that this very week there was a celebration of the 5th anniversary, a virtual celebration, of course, Heart Valve Disease Awareness Day. Why is that important? Why, of all the things that might afflict us, we should know about our heart valves and how they work and how to take care of ourselves. But also, that's really a subtext of a bigger issue, which is our own self-advocacy, our own self-care. And what it means when we have an issue in our life, is this normal aging? What is the truth about aging when it comes to the daily aches, pains, feelings, and concerns that we have? And Lindsay Clark is going to unravel all that. It's a cinch, right, Lindsay? No problem.
Piece of cake.
Yeah, piece of cake. Thanks for being with us. Well, let's delve into something very timely. Heart valve disease, and you have an awareness day. And there's a lot of things that we can unpack there. First, I certainly want you to give us a little brush of what we mean by heart valve. We learned about it in high school, but we're not always on top of our own biology. And second of all, perhaps more importantly, from a social understanding point of view, why do we need an awareness day? Why of that, of all things, should we be aware of in our own lives or those of our family members?
Well, we need an awareness day because, to your point, I don't think a lot of people know. In fact, we know a lot of people don't know about heart valve disease, because when we think of heart disease, we think of heart attacks. We might think of congestive heart failure, but not a lot of people are thinking about heart valve disease. And we actually did some survey research a number of years ago, and we found that about 3 out of 4 people knew little to nothing about heart valve disease. And that's why we started this campaign, to help people understand what it is, what their risk factors are, what the symptoms are, and why it's really important to get timely treatment. So if you start with what it is,
yes,
we have 4 valves in our heart, and heart valve disease can impact one or more of the valves. And what happens is that when they're damaged, blood can't pump as easily through the heart and to the body. And so we start to experience, symptoms of that. We also can have damage to the heart. And some types of valve disease are not serious. But others can be very serious and can be fatal. So it's really important that people know about valve disease.
Now, one of the good things we'll say about it is this is something that if you have an awareness early on, it is one of those things you can do something about. My listeners know this. We're in a struggle now that there are many geroscientific advancements that give us predictions or indications that we have a problem. Let's just take Alzheimer's. And if you know that, right now, the question is, what could you do about it? But with heart valve disease, that is something that the medical profession fairly agrees that you should know as early as possible, because you can do something about it. So what would be some of those symptoms, and how would you follow up if you think you may have them?
Well, the symptoms come from, as I mentioned, the heart having to work harder to get oxygen to the body, and the body being deprived of that oxygen. So it can be symptoms that really are as simple as just feeling a little bit out of breath, feeling dizzy. You might feel tightness or discomfort in the chest, which that's, we talk about that a lot with heart disease, and exceptional tiredness. as the disease progresses, you can have things like swelling in the abdomen or ankles and feet. So as it gets more serious, the symptoms can change. But it's those other symptoms that we want people to focus on and not dismiss them. And you sort of talked about this that we'll talk about later, but not, you know, dismissing them as just a normal part of aging. If it gets harder to get up the stairs or we feel more winded on our daily walks, it can be easy to say, well, I'm just getting older. And so that's something I have to accept. But this can be a symptom of something really serious. Not everyone has symptoms, and we can get back to that later because that gets to why we need to go for care regularly and see our physicians. But as you pointed out, what's hopeful about this is there is treatment, right? Some types people will be diagnosed with and they don't need to be treated. Some other types may just need to be monitored. So keep an eye on it over time and see if it progresses. And then if it gets to a point where either they're diagnosed with a type that's more serious or it has progressed, they can treat that valve disease. So they can go in and they can repair it. They can also replace it. And that sometimes is done with surgery, so an open heart surgery. But there are new technologies that allow for a lot of people for it to be done in a minimally invasive way. So it can be a lot easier. So there is treatment, and people can of all ages can have successful treatment and really return to the way they felt before the disease.
So let's go to an endemic problem here that we both alluded to, but it was one of the things you said you really wanted to bring out. And that is this, oh, it's all part of natural aging. Now, we think this, okay, but the real problem comes in when the doctor thinks this. And I'll tell you a real story. You know, Lindsay, my listeners know that I tell personal things all the time, so don't be surprised. When I was 63, which was 10 years ago, I went to my usual doctor, and they took all those tests, you know, that you take once a year, and everything was great. And I looked at the chart. I said, oh, this is great. There's nothing wrong. You know what he said? There will be. So he was already burying me before I started because I was 63 by then. He didn't want me to think I was going to get away with anything. There is this idea that even doctors have that over the age of 60, and now I'm over the age of 70, there should be something wrong with you. Something's wrong with you if there's nothing wrong with you. And it's okay because, gee, you're aging, why bother? What do we do about that with regard to our, you know, we don't want to sound like a kvetch, but really, we have to, you know, just going to the doctor is not enough. And I know that that's a big part of what you see, and sometimes it doesn't sit well with you, that attitude.
Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, your doctor, we could argue that he's on the lookout, right? So if something crops up, he's gonna see it. But you're right. I think that this idea that we just should accept all of the changes that come with age, it means we're gonna miss a lot. And you know, there are a lot of changes that we experience with age that we can't do anything about. But there's also a lot, and some of those things that do really feel benign, or that, with, in the case of valve disease, I've heard a lot of people talk about it, just kind of sneaks up on them, right? It was gradual enough that they didn't really notice the change until they were diagnosed and were treated and then said, wow, my goodness, I feel so much better. I even, years and years ago, did an interview with a surgeon who replaced valves, and he said his mentor, who had taught him everything, actually was diagnosed with valve disease himself. Mm-hmm. After he had gotten very sick while golfing. And in hindsight, he said, you know, I did feel the symptoms, but I didn't pay any attention to them because I'm getting old.
Yes.
And they were symptoms of valve disease. So, you know, it's hard because we need to be our own advocates, and we need to be pushing. If something feels wrong, it's just a miss, we need to push that with our doctors. And you're right, if they're just accepting it as a normal part of aging, then it's an uphill battle, but we can go see someone else too. And the key, and one of the themes that we talk about for Valve Disease Day, is to listen to your heart, right? To listen to your body. If something feels wrong, especially if you know you're at risk, age is a major risk factor, but people who have had radiation to the chest for certain cancers or who have experienced infection to the heart, and also people with things like diabetes and high blood pressure, obesity, heart failure, all of those can increase the risk of heart valve disease. So if we know we're at risk, or if something feels wrong, we need to be pushing for answers.
Now, when we come back and talk about how it gets diagnosed, and we're going to also talk about where we can get more information through your organization so that we can take advantage of all that you're doing for the 5th anniversary this week, virtual celebration, which did take place, but there's so much more to learn, heart valve disease awareness day, and a little bit more about the Alliance for Aging Research to begin with. Don't you guys go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, so now you see how it goes, right? Pretty easy. We're off now. We're now recording now.
Okay.
We'll go on to So go on to the next segment. I do want to talk about the diagnosis. I want to make sure that they get your websites and everything, you know, where they should be looking, right? And now I have a question. I don't want to ask it if it's not in your ballpark there, and that is Medicare. Is Medicare covering anything that has to do with all that has to do with heart valve disease? It would seem like this is one of those things that should be fully covered from diagnosis to cure, but I don't know the answer to that. Is that so?
It's complicated because so with the less invasive technologies, it can vary and who they've approved it for. So with medical technologies, patients, and it used to be that it was just those that they knew wouldn't survive surgery, and they're expanding that. But you know, I wouldn't want to get too much in the weeds on that because I'm not a policy person. But I could talk briefly about. I mean, yes, they cover it. Whether or not you can get less invasive can vary. Okay.
Well, that I definitely want you to say. Now, again, I'll say the same thing. For this segment, is there any other thing particularly, I have plenty of questions for you, that you would like to bring out in addition
to
those?
I really do want to go back to the diagnosis part and the and then directing people to the day. I think it's important since the day has passed that I can tell people how they can be involved even though we already did the big day.
Great. All right, Stuart, we are ready.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth, the Fountain of Truth about aging. A little bit of business to take care of. So we will have an exercise webinar, which is taking place before you will have heard this show. But don't worry about it. It's an extremely important webcast. We have Dr. Tom Rando, who's one of the leading geroscientists in exercise and mitochondria, what it does for your body, your health, and your strength. And we have a really interesting twist. We have Dr. Dan Lieberman, who's the author of Exercised, one of the big, big sellers right now on Amazon. And it's about anthropology. He's an anthropologist, a geroanthropologist. Imagine that. And remember what did he say when he was 5? When I grow up, I want to be a geroanthropologist. Well, he became one, and he will tell you why it's so hard for you to exercise anthropologically and what you could do about it. So it's a great, great webcast, and you can get the recording of it absolutely free. All you have to do is join our newsletter. You get, and that's free always, every Monday and Wednesday, a little bit of information on successful aging. Just go to my website, adrienneberg.com, adrienneberg.com, and you'll see right there how you can subscribe free of charge. And people really do enjoy it. Lots of hints, tips, and education, events, and more. So let us get back to our current discussion, which will also be in the newsletter, by the way, and that is access to our podcast. And today we have as a guest Lindsay Clark. She's Vice President of Health Education and Advocacy, with a big emphasis on advocacy, I think. She's telling us about a very special day, That took place February 22nd. But again, don't be alarmed. We're going to show you how to participate prospectively. It's the fifth anniversary and virtual celebration of heart valve disease, which is very prevalent, by the way, in older adults. It is not one of these rare diseases at all. And yet, it is something that can, in many cases, be prevented, predicted, and cured. So let's go back to Lindsay. One of the things anybody listening is going to want to know is, do I have it, right? They're going to want to know if they're subject to it and what the diagnosis, how they get diagnosed. So tell us about that.
I'd be happy to. I did want to flag one thing you said, because I think it's really important, is that it isn't a rare disease in older adults, right? It affects as many as 11 million Americans, and it's really about 1 in 10 people over the age of 75 who have moderate to severe heart valve disease. So this isn't something that, you know, they don't have to worry about. It is something we should be thinking about. So it is important to know if we have it, right? So in addition to knowing our risk, and watching for symptoms, we should be seeing our doctors every year. One of the easiest ways for them to diagnose it is to listen to our hearts. So they can hear, with most types of valve disease, there's going to be an irregular heart sound or a heart murmur that they can hear with a stethoscope. And so we should be seeing our practitioners every year and make sure they're listening to our hearts. We know that it's not always done. And so it's so simple, and we should make sure they're listening. They may, if they hear something, or if you have symptoms that suggest it could be valve disease, conduct other tests. So they're going to want to confirm it and find out what type of valve disease that is. And they'll do other imaging tests and other tests to see what it is, things like ultrasounds and echoes. And that way they can figure out what's going on and how serious it is and what the best course of treatment will be.
You know, by the numbers, people should know that more people do pass away because of a heart issue than anything else. We have a lot of emphasis on cancer because, number one, there is a lot of awareness with regard to cancer, and there's a lot of progress. But the fact is that we are, and I'm going to lay it on the line, this is the fountain of truth, we are more likely to die of heart disease than any other kind of condition. So please know that. And because it's so prevalent, in some respects, it does get overlooked. Nobody really, you know, it's like the color white. I mean, it's just there. So we should know this, and we should emphasize it. Now, let's talk about that for a moment. I realized that in getting a new doctor recently, he gave me a fairly thorough checkup, and he also gave me blood tests. Will that show up in blood tests in any way, or is it all from listening at this early stage of diagnosis?
You know, that's a great question, and I'm not a medical expert, so I'm not sure. I would suspect if it's further along and the heart is under distress that there may be something that shows up in the blood test, but that's something we really want to avoid, is having it be that far along when it's detected. And so it's better if it's caught early, and that really is very, it's very common that it's heard with a heart murmur. So a lot of people are first diagnosed when they go to their doctor for something else and they hear the heart murmur.
Ah, interesting. So, yes, now, and part of it, as Lindsay had mentioned, is because it's gradual. So let's talk about how you can get involved, how you can raise your awareness, your information, give us the websites to look at, and anything else. Throw it at us, because we want to know more.
Great. Well, I would love to direct listeners to valvedisease.org. So that's the home of the Heart Valve Disease Awareness Day campaign. So they can learn all about what we're doing, all about valve disease, and then how to get involved. And I think it's important, especially since we just celebrated the day, to emphasize that while we chose a day to sort of raise awareness collectively, we need to be doing it all year long. So we have close to 95 partners. It's nonprofits and professional societies and hospitals and heart centers that are all committed to raising awareness throughout the year. So this is something that we should be learning about now, and we should be talking to our friends and family about it, and we should be talking to our doctor about it. It doesn't need to be isolated just to February 22nd. But folks can also go and see some of the things that we did for the day. So we had a virtual celebration where we actually honored some of those really important partners and advocates that have helped to make sure that, that through these 5 years, we've reached as many people as possible. And there's some really great videos there. We did actually an interview with some doctors from the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute at NIH, including the director, Gary Gibbons.
Yes.
And both the doctors answered some great questions. And so there's a lot of resources that people can find.
Right. And also remember that behavioral health, more than probably anything else, can save your heart. When I say more than anything else, there are some things that you simply can't avoid by the most exercise and the best food and the least stress. But pressures on the heart are one of those things that really do both improve after you have a problem and can be prevented by the kind of behaviors we talk about. Again, you know what they are. Everybody in America knows what it is. Stay in a good weight range, eat the right foods, exercise, not so easy. So in looking at these things, Lindsay, where are we with behavioral health? And because that's also part of advocacy, advocating almost within your family and yourself for the right kinds of habits. Some of the hard things to do can save your life.
Absolutely. And do you mean specifically for heart valve disease?
Yes. Yeah. What are some of the things that we'll learn we ought to be doing?
Well, you know, it's age is really the major risk factor. And there are some things we can do, just like you mentioned, with other types of heart disease. We know that eating a healthy diet and exercising and maintaining a healthy weight and then managing things like diabetes, high blood pressure, and cholesterol, those may all reduce risk. And they're just great for our hearts anyhow and the rest of our body. But heart valve disease is mainly caused by age. So it's as far as researchers know, it's sort of a wear and tear.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we can't do things to help maybe prevent or slow the progression and also just to keep our hearts healthy in general.
Yeah. So before we leave for a moment, one more time, where should we go to get all this information? Give us the right website.
It's valvediseaseday.org.
Very easy, valvediseaseday.org. Don't you go anywhere. We're going to come back, and we're going to be talking about this issue of what's covered, what isn't covered. We'll have a few minutes with regard to the cost of not only your diagnosis, but your cure, your prevention. And we're also going to delve a little bit deeper into how we accept certain deficiencies in our day, in our day-to-day life, because the excuse is, it's just aging. Don't you go anywhere.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da-da-da-da.
So now, Lindsay, I do want to go just a little briefly, just what you said about Medicare, bring it up. But the other thing is I do would like you to unpack that question of health span. I don't think that it's talked about enough, but this is a great segue to it. So that's the two things I want to discuss. Anything else on your list?
No, I'm happy to talk just generally about what else the Alliance does.
Right. Great. All right. We're ready.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Now we just have to, we have 8 seconds to be quiet. Very hard for us.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
Good news. This is Adrienne Berg. This is Generation Bold, and this is the Fountain of Truth about Aging, and we have a little bit of good news. Last year, October, the midst of COVID, we couldn't believe the fact that we might not have a conference. First conference started in 2017 in London called Targeting Metabesity, and metabesity to us means some of the common causes of aging itself. And then COVID struck, and it would have been the third conference, and we were worried. But we did have it. We had it virtually, and 1,000 of you showed up. Over 4 days, with most people being on all 4 days, it was stunning. You also had a great gala, I must say. Well, the good news is we've decided to do it again. And we are going to have that conference in October. And COVID permitting, we're even going to have a live venue, which will be in Washington, D.C. But it will continue to be virtual, and it will continue always to be free for you. So I want to know who you are so that you can get your royal invitation. And all you have to do is go to adrianberg.com, be a newsletter subscriber, and that's how I know where to find you. And you'll get your invite. Right now, speaking of invitation, you don't need an invitation, see what I did here, to get a diagnosis with regard to your heart if you're not feeling well. And right now, the only thing we can say about that is you know. We've been speaking with Lindsay Clark. She's the Vice President of Health Education and Advocacy at the Alliance for Aging Research. And she says if you're feeling fatigued, particularly if you're seeing some swelling in your ankles or legs, if you're just not going up that hill the way you used to, or if yoga just seems different to you, don't take for granted that you are, in quotes, getting old, end quotes. Go to your doctor, get that diagnosis, and do something about it, because by and large, probably there is something that can be done about it. But Lindsay, you know, people now get dollar signs. Is this covered? I'm going to assume that something that is so prevalent in our society would be covered by Medicare, but I'm not sure. So give us a few hints and tips to what to look for on that, what to expect.
Sure, and of course it's so important, right? Now listening to our heart and having that annual physical is obviously covered. And then for Medicare, you know, we have the annual wellness visits that everyone should be taking advantage of. And so, you know, we can be getting to see our healthcare professionals every year, and that's covered. And listening to our heart is easy. The diagnostic tests, if they are concerned that something is going on, are usually covered, right? So if it looks like something's wrong, they're going to take care of us. And then in terms of the repair and replacement, it really depends on the type of disease and how severe it is, as well as our age, as to what type of treatment will be recommended and covered. And so that's really a conversation they should make sure they're having with their healthcare professional, as well as checking in with their provider for Medicare or other insurance, any supplemental insurance, to see what's covered.
Sure. Now let's talk about this in the context of a buzzword. Buzzword is health span. I'm going to ask you to define it, but I'm also going to tell everybody that this word, which is it's a real buzzword right now, the United Nations has declared that they're going to take the moonshot for equal health span for all. Everybody knows Micah Talis Institute has the moonshot for health span for all, but the Alliance for Aging Research has been talking about that since the 80s. So you let us know from the beginning what was meant by that, and whether you've seen it evolve to mean something a little bit different today.
Thrilled to hear that it's a buzzword and that it's the topic of so many conferences and major efforts, because it's really important. And yes, the Alliance has been talking about it for a long time. In fact, Daniel Perry, who founded the Alliance in 1986, was at the tables with the geriatricians and the leaders in gerontology who were talking about what this meant, what was health span. And this idea came from not wanting to just see research and advances in health that let us live longer, but we wanted to live more years in good health. So we wanted to, they call it, you know, compressing morbidity. So really shorten the years where we're living in poor health, and have more of those years where we're living happier, more productive lives. And so that's really what the Alliance focuses on, is advancing that research so that we can live more years, have a longer health span.
So now an opinion question. So the United Kingdom, the UK, they have what they call health of a nation, and it's a national policy on health span. Very recently, New Zealand went further. They are actually looking at their GNP, gross national product, the economy of the nation, and they're having a new index, which says how many healthy years their citizens live. Very interesting stuff. We don't have anything like that. We're pretty scattered with our healthcare systems and so on. Do you think it would make a difference if we had a national policy on health span? I ask, that's a loaded question because my group believes that. But I'm interested. You've been around for a long time. You think that would make a difference in the actual years that we live without these morbidities?
I do, because I think inherently if we had an emphasis on health span, we would have to have more of an emphasis on prevention. And our healthcare system has been moving towards that, right? So we're trying to move away from not just treating the disease, but preventing the disease. But that's just problematic and difficult when we're talking about how we pay for things. But we really have seen a lot of changes, especially with the Affordable Care Act. We are shifting more towards prevention. And I spoke about that annual wellness visit, and that is all about getting together a prevention plan with your doctor and looking at the tests we need for screening, appropriate screening, and what we need to be doing and looking at as a whole to prevent disease. I also think it would prioritize things in a way that we don't always see in the U.S., especially, which is valuing those healthier later years. We talk a lot about, in a lot of health economic settings, especially about QALYs or quality adjusted life years. And we know that QALYs haven't always valued people after retirement in the same way that we do in our working years. And so I really think that aligning priorities with health span would make a difference towards prioritizing prevention and really showing the value of our older population and all of the value that we as a society get from that population.
You know, I got involved with this from a wholly different point of view. It was from the point of view of stamping out ageism. And I began to realize that one of the reasons that we are so ageist, whether it's in hiring practices, whether it's even in dating practices, or even when we're looking in the mirror, by the way, to ourselves, we're very self-ageist, is that there is a reality to it. Like any stereotype, there's a reality to it. And the reality is we expect decline. So why would we want to age to begin with? If we can extend health span, which is healthy aging without these comorbidities, then our image of being older will change because the reality will change. Most of the time when we deal with ageism, we're trying to change the image of it and leave the reality the same. With you, as Vice President of Health Education and Advocacy and this awareness, you're doing both. Both the image and the reality have to change. And when we come back, I'm going to ask the big question, did COVID help us? Funny question. Did COVID help us in getting these goals? Don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
I heard a little buzz. They were going to tighten up the music. That's the beauty of recording and not going right live. Okay, Lindsay. So now I think we're in our last segment. So I definitely want to talk about COVID, and I don't even want you to tell me. I want you to surprise me because I don't know if you think it's going to accelerate some of your work or not. I hope it will, but I'm not sure. But the other, what I will ask you is there anything, and I'm going to ask you more about the Alliance's work. And probably we won't have much time for anything else. That's why I want to ask you if this one particular thing you want covered.
With valve disease, or you think with COVID?
Yeah, just anything you want me to ask you, that because I am going to ask you if you think COVID will accelerate your work, and more about the Alliance. But
no,
I don't want to miss
anything. But clarify for me what you mean by accelerate our work.
Well, we got the vaccine out pretty fast, considering that great drugs take 20 years, most of the time. And also, a lot of people died. I mean, we had a lot of hubris in this country, I'll say it right out, that we're very, very healthy, older baby boomers. We're not. We dropped like flies. So, and a lot of it had to do with comorbidity. My producer is laughing. I will not say drop like flies on the air. Okay, Stuart, thank you.
So I think it keeps it interesting.
So anyway, but the fact is that it wasn't a good showing. It wasn't. And I'm just wondering if attention will be paid to strengthening us in our later years because
gotcha.
We were so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
I see.
Or will we just
okay.
put it behind us and, you know, business as usual? I don't know. So that's my question.
Yeah. Hopefully not.
okay, hopefully not. All right, Stu, we are ready to go.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. We are coming to the conclusion of our show, but not to the conclusion of this topic. And there's an ongoing issue here. Now, we are here basically celebrating the 5th anniversary of Virtually. There was a real virtual celebration on February 22nd, Heart Valve Disease Awareness Day. We are trying to become much more aware of the fact that we may have heart valve issues, and it's not just that we're tired, and it's not just that we're older. And Lindsay Clark, who's Vice President of Health Education and Advocacy for Alliance for Aging Research, is giving us a lot of information on this and asking us to go get that diagnosis if we think it's required. But I'm wondering, Lindsay, as we talked about a little bit during the break, COVID was not a good showing for us. I personally went from an old lady to a vulnerable population within a week. And it became very clear that older adults were very vulnerable to COVID, a lot because of their age, but really because of the comorbidities they were suffering because of aging. Do you think because of COVID there will be a greater emphasis on how healthfully we age or health span? Or will it just be let's put this whole thing behind us and business as usual? What do you think?
I think it's a really wonderful question, and I hadn't thought about it because we spend a lot of time talking about what has COVID meant for minorities and how were we treating seniors and older adults during COVID. There was a lot of isolation. There wasn't the action we wanted to see in long-term care centers to prevent infection that we wish we'd seen. We spend a lot of time talking about the inequities that really rose to the surface and how we can resolve that. And that's really important. I think we're seeing a lot of progress there. And I do think we're talking about how we could have gotten services to older adults better during the pandemic. We're still talking about that in terms of vaccine distribution. Anyone who's not able to get to a vaccine site, how can we get it to them? So there's a lot that's come out of COVID in these conversations, but I don't know. I haven't actually heard a lot of talk about what can we do to make sure we are aging more healthfully to prevent in the future having such an impact from an infectious disease. So I really like that you've brought it up. I hope so. I hope that it will become part of the conversation. But I think there's just a lot of lessons to learn from this that we're going to have to keep in our sights. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll do a little soapbox for a minute here. One of the things that we believe is that health span has to do with equity. So we talk a lot about health span equity or equitable health span because building on what you just said, it's not only the older adult in diverse populations or underserved populations. It's also their families because the family caregivers statistics are wildly divergent from different populations. African Americans, if you include Hispanic people of color, 23% of them are family caregivers. That's an enormous percentage compared to any other group. So the effect of greater comorbidities, more diabetes, more blood pressure problems in, let's say, African Americans, doesn't just affect them. It affects their whole family and their ability to work. So this is a really, really big issue, this equity issue. And we keep thinking instead of patching it up and having better access when you're sick, why not just not get sick in the first place? Big impact on equity. And that's where I'm hoping that the fact that the vaccines came pretty fast, it wasn't fast enough for anybody, but it was fast compared to mostly how we bring different solutions to the table, will, and the fact that who did actually pass away or were vulnerable to this will shine a light on the fact that we really don't have the best health span, meaning healthy longevity in the world. Now, I would say of any organization that's working on this, it really is yours. It's the Alliance for Aging Research. So tell us a little bit more about that, because that's something that professionals may know about, but I don't know the consumers or our listeners know about the Alliance for Aging Research.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, I mentioned earlier, Dan Perry founded the organization in 1986, so we've been around a while, and we're focused on this idea of advancing research to extend the amount of years that we can live healthy, happier, more productive lives, and we do that in a lot of ways. So we have a lot of policy and advocacy work to make sure, you know, to look at things like access, to look at things like equity. We also, and my purview is the education space, and we create a lot of resources on diseases and conditions that disproportionately impact older adults, either because it is a disease of aging or because they're not having the same treatment experience because of their age. And we focus in on those issues. And so it can be things like valve disease. It can be things like vision loss, Alzheimer's, sarcopenia, which is muscle wasting. You name it, we've probably touched it. So we create those resources to let folks know you know, the basics of a disease, but also what they need to advocate for. And so that we can empower people to take charge of their health and to get the answers that they need and to make sure that they're getting the treatment and care that they need.
Now, I don't want to go too far afield because the issue of heart disease and heart valve is our focus today. And it's very important because statistically, most of us will succumb to something that has to do with our heart. But there's one more here. And that, recently we had a psychiatrist on our show. And for the first time in our conference, we're going to have a panel on that. So even more, perhaps, than issues of our biologic aging is our psychologic aging. If we're depressed, if we feel lonely, it is so accepted that, gee, that's all part of aging. And it's not all part of aging. Sometimes it's societal issue that we don't feel we have a place in our society or we can contribute, but other times it is what any younger person might feel, real depression, real stress, real issues. So don't push that under the rug and say, well, what do you expect? He's 80. That is not the right way to look at this. So now let me throw this back at you, Lindsay. The Alliance for Aging Research does a lot of different things. If you go to their website, you will be amazed. So first of all, tell everybody the website, and they can take a look at a lot of things. But my question to you is, what are you working on next, now that this big awareness day is over? So what's the website, and what's your next focus?
The website is agingresearch.org. And I have a lot of things that I'm focusing on. I think the biggest thing right now is vaccination. So we do a lot of work on trying to get everybody to get vaccinated, but also trying to emphasize pre-COVID the value of and the importance of older adults getting vaccines, getting their routine vaccinations. But right now we're spending a lot of time thinking about ways to increase vaccine confidence. And you mentioned something earlier about how fast we got the vaccine. And I love that to you, that's just a sign of the remarkable state of science that we're in right now, because that's what it is, right? It's incredible science. It's building on what we already had, and it's an immense collaboration and, you know, some financial risk. But we certainly did not sacrifice on safety or efficacy when it came to the vaccines. And so we're really trying to increase confidence and make sure that in the very communities that were hit hardest by COVID, that they are getting access to the vaccines, because that's not always, you know, we clearly, and you talked about this, access is a problem. And so we want to make sure everybody's getting vaccinated, and we want to get out from under COVID as soon as we possibly can. But we also want to continue to look at some of the things you mentioned that were spotlighted. And so we will be looking at inequities in all diseases, which continuing to do that for all populations, including older adults. We're also working on a lot of resources on things like neuropsychiatric symptoms, which are things that happen with Alzheimer's, and nutrition and aging. So we really run the gamut of resources, and we have a lot coming this year. So I would love people to come check us out at agingresearch.org.
Well, this has been fascinating as well as fun. I mean, it's hard to believe that we had fun talking about heart valve disease, but that's what happens on this show very, very frequently. And heads up, guys, awareness. So thank you so much. And I'll say to everybody what I say every single week, even though we're inside yet for a little while, get out there, kids, and make it happen.
I'm inappropriate.
That's it. We did great. That
great.
Was a great show. That was a
Thank
wonderful
show. Thank you. That
show.
Was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that, I love to hear when the guests have fun. And I'm, do I know I have a contact with your PR person. I don't know if Lauren is on now, Stuart says, but do I have your
I
email
am, yes.
address? Oh, hi, Lauren.
Hi.
Lindsay, if I have your email address, I'll just send you, you know, what we're doing. And even tomorrow's webcast on exercise is going to get recorded. So, you know, we can even get a recording of that, and you'll see how you approach
these
things.
Yeah, that would be lovely. I don't know that you have my address. It's L. Clark with an E, but we can send it to you, too. And also Lauren can pass on and connect me.
That would be wonderful. And
anything,
we'll talk
yeah.
a little bit. Because we're really the new kid on the block, and we just want to get a few things done.
I love it.
Not,
yeah,
be wonderful. So thank you so much. And Lauren,
thank
everything
you.
Okay
thank
with
you.
Great, you'll get
everything
all the links.
Wonderful. What a fascinating interview. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Wonderful, wonderful time, and so much knowledge there. Thanks, Lindsay. Thank you, Lauren, for making this happen.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.